You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where Kavanaugh means Kava yes. I'm your host, Justin Elmozdeski, and if you like stupid puns like that, why don't you tell a friend about the midside, because everyone is welcome here, available all places podcasts are streaming, or simply at themidside.com/podcast. Joining us this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
If I had one, this is where I would make the little party noise sound, you know. I put on a little hat.
Oh, you mean one of those clackers?
Clackers? No, yeah. I mean like the thing you blow into and it goes whee.
Oh, okay.
Except not that sound. And like sometimes they have like little paper things attached to the end that make you look like a chameleon with your tongue.
I thought you meant the plastic one that when you hold it and then you twist it in the air, it makes a clacking sound. They have those at parties too.
That sounds too Asian for me. Also, I would shoot one of those, they look like little alcohol bottles, and you pull the string on one end, and it shoots out confetti from the others. If I had one of those, I'd do that. I paint a real picture with my words. A word artist.
Yeah, it's almost like this is like an audio podcast, and your words matter.
That's right. All words matter.
Also joining us... from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his white male gay privilege, which is probably extra special important this week. William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, just got back from a short little weekend trip to San Diego. I had a friend's wedding reception to go to, had a lot of fun, possibly drank too much of the Maker's Mark bottle that was... at the bar. It was a very small reception, maybe about 30 people. And they bought one handle of Maker's Mark, and I think the three gays and two other people, we basically polished off that bar over the entire course of the reception. So had a really good time.
Did you black out, sir?
I like bourbon. I like bourbon. I like bourbon.
I still like bourbon. Weddings. So over the next couple of weeks, you may miss out on me. I'm breaking this news to my midside hosts as we speak, because I am officiating two weddings in back-to-back weekends. Yes, indeed. Traveling home to officiate my cousin's wedding. The next weekend, I'll be going to Louisiana, New Orleans, to officiate Midsider Amber's wedding.
Wow. I did not know you were in the lucrative wedding officiating business.
Yes, the lucrative wedding officiating business. And then I was asked recently to officiate a wedding in February. So this will be that wedding, when it comes up, will be the fourth wedding I've officiated. I long for the day that I'm invited to a wedding that I don't have to officiate.
Well, you better hope I get married.
Because only Tom Brady or Bill Belichick can actually consecrate your marriage, I understand.
So, that's correct. Also, yes. Do these people at least fly you out to the weddings?
No, absolutely not.
So
no, I would be a guest anyway, so I would have to go. So right. I don't expect them to fly me out. In both of the upcoming instances, I get to stay for free at the wedding venue, which is also a house.
Okay, that's nice. At least they're giving you a perk. Otherwise, they're like, hey, you want to come to our wedding and also have homework and responsibility?
Yes. Also, write poetry. Be profound and consecrate our marriage. Thank you.
Also, so no, do you want to come to our wedding and not ruin it forever with your performance as leading the entire ceremony that we'll remember for the rest of our marriage, which will probably last 5 years because of divorce?
That's right. So, no pressure whatsoever. Just a good time and New Orleans.
Are there, do you have to take a anti-bias training or inclusion training before becoming an officiator to make sure you don't say something insensitive?
That's right. I now pronounce you Zay and Zay. You may kiss the Zay.
Did you ask what pronouns they preferred?
No, I just use Zay. I'm extra inclusive like that. Hey, it's guys. Interesting because the through string on all of these, 1 minute, Justin, this is not your show anymore. The through string on all of these is that they're all atheist weddings. So I think I have a found a niche for myself.
Cornered the market, so to speak.
Atheist, you know, guy who will marry you business. Because it's not a priest. I don't know what it is.
Guys, why are we doing 10 minutes on weddings without any punchlines?
There were plenty of punchlines.
Yeah. Wait, just because you didn't have any punchlines and we all think on our feet.
We're trying to give you a hint, Justin.
What about me? It's legal for... Why me? It's legal for William now, too.
Well, yeah, of course. But, you know, it's your show, so...
All right, well, since it's my show and you're trying to give me a hint, I think we should just get on with it. That's what I think we should do. Because that's what you're telling me to do, is get on with it, right?
Yeah, just get on with it.
So let's get on with it into the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Believe women, don't believe women, believe men, don't believe men, who the hell knows. But a Los Angeles Times article piqued our interest this week with this headline, quote, "Is it ever right to not hashtag believe women?" End quote. Of course, this controversy comes on the heels of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing, and now we have a new Supreme Court justice named Bart O. Kavanaugh. And we were wondering, you know, in this social media world, what the hashtag would be that came out of this, because a while ago we had hashtag Me Too, and now we have hashtag Believe Women. So this article is by Kathy Young, and she starts it like this. Amid the passions of the Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court confirmation battle and the sexual assault allegations by psychologist Christine Blasey Ford, the topic of false accusations has become particularly incendiary. A professor at USC came under attack last week for bringing it up when a school-wide email from a campus women's group invited a, quote, dialogue on sexual violence and urged people to believe survivors. In reply, engineering professor James Moore cautioned against automatic belief, stressing due process and noting that accusers sometimes lie. The response was a torrent of hostile emails, a campus rally calling for Moore's firing, and a message from the dean condemning his insensitive comment. So much for dialogue. The article goes on to point out that, of course, some accusers lie. That should be non-controversial. We have the Rolling Stone story from the University of Virginia, the Duke lacrosse case, and many others that we've chronicled on the show. So the answer of whether or not we should believe women, and should we believe women, is complicated, argues Kathy Young. She talks about the statistics about percentage of sexual assault accusations that are false. Sometimes the numbers are cited are 2 to 8%, but those, of course, are the known ones. And there could be many times in which accusers are either not charged or are charged and found innocent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't really have good statistics. But the point of all this is, I think, conclusion, which is, quote, "But some women, like some men, do evil and irrational things, and while few men may go to prison due to wrongful accusations, such accusations are not harmless. Consequences can include a frightening legal ordeal, expulsion from college, job loss, upending reputational damage. Any insistence on presumptively believing all accusers will almost certainly hurt innocent defendants. Such a directive in England, for instance, has already led to several botched cases and a massive review of sexual assault prosecutions. The conundrum of he said, she said may never be solved. The best we can do is take each accusation seriously and judge it on its individual merits. Believe women is a powerful rallying cry, but it is no substitute for due diligence, and calls to disregard the risk of wrongful allegations are illiberal and dangerous. Justin, is this too rational for our culture? Is this just too much to ask of people to judge cases on their individual merits?
I don't know, but you know where it's not too rational? The Midside. And if you love the Midside and you love how rational it is, then you should support it on Patreon. Patreon.com/TheMidside.
Using a sexual assault story to plug the show.
Well, somebody didn't follow the outline, so...
Am I supposed to shill or something?
Yeah, it said shill in the outline. TheMidside.com/Patreon. Okay. Patreon.com/TheMidside. I thought that was pretty good the way I did that. You had to fucking call me out on it, though.
Here we go.
That's because you were laughing.
Welcome to the meta side. People write things in the outline, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say them or not. Last week I said them, and it turned out it was a William note about a story that had nothing to do with anything other than something William wanted to say. So maybe we should note who should say what in the outline.
Or William can stop fucking up my outline without my consent. I did not consent to my outline.
Hashtag being... believe all Justin.
Yeah, they should believe all Justin. That should be the title of the show. Hashtag believe all Justin. No, that's of course right. This is too rational. You know why it's too rational, Daniel?
Why?
Because it says the word individual in it. I'm glad you actually asked the question, because that's all I was going to do is I was going to read that last part and just say individual, because it's actually earlier in the article where she's like, well, what if the person is a chronic liar and you don't believe them because they're a chronic liar? And I want to be like, so you mean you judge each case individually based upon the people and the circumstances in the case? That's all it is. And that's the problem with this whole thing. Right now, believe all women is hashtag believe no man, because it's just looking at it collectively. Oh, if a woman says it happened, it must have happened, so we have to believe her. If a man says it didn't happen, we don't believe him because he's a man. And you're not judging people for who they actually are. And that is the most unjust thing you can ever do, especially in this situation. And that's what we saw with the whole Kavanaugh thing. And what's so scary to me about everything that just happened was the fact that people actually looked at what Kavanaugh said and the way he defended himself and thought he was guilty because they saw that he was a man, or they saw that he was right-wing, or they saw that he was an originalist for the interpretation of the Constitution, and they just decided a priori based upon that rather than his character. Because those are now substitutes for character.
Yes. Because it's not about the individual to the left, and to the right, in most cases. It's not about the individual. It's about the cause. It's about the agenda we're trying to further. So we don't need to look at Brett Kavanaugh as an individual human who has done individual things in his life. We look at him only as a representative of the white, privileged, patriarchal, elitist, racist, sexist, whateverist society that we need to bring down with our hashtag Believe Women campaign. So, William, will this change anyone's mind, do you think? And I say that a little bit sarcastically, but a little bit not, because a poll came out today that showed that independents, so neither Republicans nor Democrats, independents by a 28-point margin strongly disliked how the Democrats handled the nomination process, specifically the treatment of Brett Kavanaugh. So I'm wondering if this honestly will change anyone's mind or not.
Yeah, I think that we'll have to see how the polls end up this election season, but there's certainly not for the people who even give a damn about this, right? Because there's tons and tons of people that I run into in my, you know, in IRL, as we say, that have no idea what was going on about this. They didn't see it as even a blip on the radar, right? Like more of them knew about the hurricane coming through into Nevada here in California than that, right? And so I think it may have the potential of changing some minds. It's certainly firing up the base, and it looks like it's splitting the independents in a way that's usually the Republicans do the opposite, right? They split the independents and push them away. But in this case, it looks like the Democrats are pushing people away. So I think it could have an effect on the election, but is this going to change people's mind? The people who are really paying attention to this, I don't know. I don't think so. But I'm glad someone is actually talking about this in terms of the principle of justice, right? And yeah. and we mean that in the individual sense, right? We don't mean the collective justice, right? This is that last paragraph is so important. It took a while to get there, though, right? Because you can see the sort of group, the thing I rail about a lot on this podcast, the applying group attributes to individuals, right? You see that all over in the article in the beginning, but then it turns the corner there at the end, and it's like, hey, this is about judging individual people in individual cases. And even when it comes to Kavanaugh, like, you know, like Justin was saying, you had people looking at how he defended himself, like how, like the words he used and the emotions he displayed as evidence for his guilt, right? Yet we have a ton of other behavior between in over the intervening 35 years, right? And none of that was important. It was right. It was using this obviously extreme circumstance. I saw someone belittling it and saying it was just a job interview, which I thought was hilarious, right? Like, a job interview is probably one of the most stressful things a person, I would say a person under like 25 goes through, right? Like their first professional job interview, super, you know, you get a lot of emotional baggage around that. This is not that, right? This is definitely bigger than that. He's being accused on a worldwide stage of being one of the most vile humans you can be and is supposed to, I don't know, smile, be happy, be concerned, do an apology. Like none of those things seem, this is such an extreme situation. And yeah, I think that this idea of how did this get in the LA Times? That's really the question that I'm going to toss back to you. This idea coming from the LA Times, it boggles my mind.
Kathy Young has written quite a bit for the LA Times, so I think she's built up a good relationship with them. She is a very libertarian thinker. She considers herself, I think, a libertarian feminist or something like that. And so she understands the individual element of these things and applies it to the cultural conversations that we're having today. So one thing I want to ask you, Justin, and William can weigh in here too, taking this in a slightly different direction, unless you want to bring it back because it's your show. So there's this prominent objectivist all over social media on the Kavanaugh stuff, essentially making this argument, which is he didn't call it a job interview, but he basically said, look, Kavanaugh is applying to be on the Supreme Court. That's part of our government. It's a powerful part of our government. So essentially, if you have literally any doubt about this person at all, he should not be confirmed. Now, my question to you, Justin, is one, who would be confirmed? Who would possibly be confirmed? And then two, is that the right standard? If you have any doubt about someone's either character, professional ability, or any plausible category of thing that would apply to them, is that the standard by which we judge, I don't know, anything?
Stop saying what I'm going to say in the question, giving me nothing to say after you've asked the question. You literally said two things in there that I was going to say. I can't remember what the first one was, but the second one was anything. I was going to reply to you and say, well, what could we judge based on that standard? The reason that standard fails is it is disconnected from reality. I'm going to say some, first of all, those were fighting words for objectivists. Second of all, yes. I'm going to say something that's probably controversial.
You?
Because I'm supposed to be objectivist, but whenever you hire anyone, you never know. You don't know. There's always doubt. There's always doubt. Think about if we applied this standard to drafting NFL QBs. Yeah. None would ever be drafted. You don't know. You don't know if they're going to be good. You always have doubt. Any player you draft has doubt. This is a multi-billion dollar industry, and first round picks fail every year. If they knew, well, then those picks would be surefire Hall of Famers. You don't know. You always have doubt. Why? Because people are multifaceted and these are complex jobs, especially the higher you get, the more you get where this is the elite level jobs like the Supreme Court. You don't know. Wasn't it Kennedy that they thought was going to be an originalist and now he's the wishy-washy guy in the middle?
Was. Now Kavanaugh's that guy. And same with Sandra Day O'Connor, and David Souter was appointed by Reagan, I believe. So,
yeah. you never know. So this standard, are you trying to get me to rant on objectivist? That's a misapplication of the philosophy of objectivism. It's a misapplication, the idea that, oh, well, because there's objective truth, you can know exactly how things are going to go. So you can know exactly who the ideal candidate is. And because of that, you won't have doubt about them. That's not how human psychology works. I'm sorry, yeah, it's not.
And I have another thing, William, which is this something you brought up before and something I've been harping on to anyone who will listen, including my two-month-old, because he can't walk away yet. I neither have doubt nor certainty about Kavanaugh in regards to the sexual assault Blasey Ford thing. And the reason I say that is because her claim is arbitrary.
Yeah.
It's not true or false. It's arbitrary. Because there's no evidence, and there's no possible way to get evidence. There is no time machine. There is no omniscient, human, whatever, watchful eye, panopticon, that's what I was looking for, that I can go up to and see across all time and space and say, oh, this is what happened in this particular place or not. So with no evidence for and no evidence against, her claim is arbitrary. And so the point about having doubt about Kavanaugh, how do you have doubt? There's no evidence. It's neither here nor there. It's just someone making a claim and you go, okay. And then you move on with your life because there's no evidence. It's not just a misapplication of that part of the philosophy. It's a misapplication of the epistemology as well.
I'm gonna steal your spot here.
Man. What? Yeah. The gays being oppressed and the women.
Yeah. The gay and the women being oppressed.
Undergone.
Yeah. I mean, Daniel, when you're talking about it's a misapplication of the philosophy, it's a misapplication of epistemology, and you're talking about this idea of there's nothing to doubt. This is how the right wing always loses to the left wing. You've just pinpointed it. Because they're so concerned with following what is right, following whatever their moral code is, so on and so forth, that the left weaponizes that against them. If I know that if I put any seed of doubt in your head about someone you really like and I really hate, then that's what I'm going to do. Because I know you're going to turn on them. Because you're not going to stand on the principle of your own judgment. That is the irony here. Is whoever is saying this, I don't know who it is. I don't really care who it is. Is not standing on the principle of his own judgment. He's doing it based upon some disconnected, I think this is what you're saying, some floating abstraction rather than the reality of the person, and that's being weaponized against him. And that's how the right loses all these things, and that's why we're at the place we're at.
Yes. It'd be as if you were making a list of things you know with some certainty, or absolute certainty, however you want to put it, about Brett Kavanaugh. And when you got to, did Brett Kavanaugh assault Christine Blasey Ford? The answer would be, I don't know, but the claim is arbitrary. And you would say, all the other things I know about Brett Kavanaugh, that he's not assaulted a woman for 37 years or whatever, that he's a highly religious man, he goes to church all the time, he does all these other things, he seems to be an upstanding human being, there doesn't seem to be any support, but for this particular claim is neither true nor false. It is something I neither know nor don't know. So it can't create doubt. That's what kills me about that. It can't create doubt because it's neither here nor there.
Yeah, Daniel, I think I want to ensure my future unemployment by taking it a step further. It's not just that the claim is arbitrary, because I think I could make an argument saying, like, hey, someone's accusation can be arbitrary, but like, There's it's like you know, if you get enough claims that establish a pattern, maybe it goes to the next level. You know, like we can sort of like try and tease that out, like philosophically. It's a very epistemological problem, right? But the thing that disappointed me the most by some of the folks that are my friends, some of the folks that are my followers that I follow on Twitter, is that the argument they were making was basically, well, this is a man, so therefore it has like weight, right? They weighted it more because they're saying, well, of course men behave this way, right? They weighted the accusation more automatically because, well, yes, this is how, you know, this is how men behave. This is how people who drink alcohol when they're 18 behave, right?
Yeah.
They used the pattern to say, well, of course. This is how people behave. So this accusation, this arbitrary claim has weight. And that to me is the more dangerous part, right? Because we see that's the same thing that we see social justice warriors do. When they start making those arguments about inclusion and diversity and why we should be having quotas, which I know we'll get to in a bit. Like it's that same claim of like, well, of course the culture is this way, the group interaction in average or in aggregate behaves this way, so therefore every individual interaction is tainted by this.
Yeah. And I'll go, we're taking a long time on this story, but there's something else here, which is this is a tactic that is used in a lot in politics, but it's used a lot just in the culture. And so let's compare, for instance, Bill Cosby and Brett Kavanaugh. Yeah. So Bill Cosby, you know, starts off and there are many accusers, but it's sort of the same scenario where there's no real evidence to suggest these things. There's just a bunch of accusers and there's presumption of innocence, etc. But it wasn't the fact that there were more accusers that came out that made Bill Cosby look more guilty. It was the fact that the more that accusers came out, the more of them who had evidence against him. Actual evidence. So compare that to Brett Kavanaugh, who has Christine Blasey Ford and Ramirez and this other woman, and then there was another guy who says he saw Brett Kavanaugh assault his girlfriend on a boat. The problem with all of them is that if you take zero plus zero plus zero plus zero, the left, and sometimes the right, depending on the situation, will say, well, that equals 100. You go, well, how do you get that? And it goes, well, there's enough accusations that it must be something. But you can't allow zeros to ever add up to 100.
You know what that sounds like, Daniel?
What?
Deflategate.
Yes, it is.
You know what it sounds like to exactly me? It sounds like new math. Your like child will core. Soon be. Yes. Your child will soon be learning how many zeros add up to 100.
Yes, it's a zero plus a zero, and it's something that politics does all the time. But Justin, yes, it happens in all places where you want to paint someone to be a bad person, but you don't have evidence. So all you do is make assertions. I'm just going to make assertion after assertion after assertion after assertion. And even though there are no premises to these assertions, there's no evidence to these assertions, by the time someone hears the 10th assertion, they'll just go, fine, he's guilty. Or fine, he deflated footballs, or whatever it is. And they don't care anymore because their crow is blown with assertions and they have no room for evidence. So don't fall for that tactic, Midsiders. If it's something is a zero, it is a zero.
It's
a nothing.
High school rumors.
A nil.
You say
set.
A bad thing about someone and then everyone believes it, even though there's no evidence that that's what happened.
Yes. By the way, the guy who said he saw Kavanaugh assault his girlfriend in a boat has since recanted and said he's very sorry that essentially he confused Kavanaugh with someone else, and it's clear that he was wrong. So,
wait, I'm confused with that whole story.
Yeah,
how do you see your girlfriend get assaulted on a boat and not know who that person is for the rest of your life because you kicked the shit out of him?
I don't know.
That's some toxic masculinity right there.
That's right. Well, speaking of toxic masculinity, California is trying to do something about it with a new law. California, a new law? My God, it must be news. Oh, God. Okay. So California has enacted the We Are Fascist law. And that law essentially says that any publicly traded firm in the state must place at least one woman on their board of directors by the end of 2019 or face a penalty. It also requires company with five directors to add two women by the end of 2021, and companies with six or more directors to add at least three more women by the end of the same year. It's the first such law in the books in the United States, though similar measures are common in Europe. This was several of many laws that were signed by Governor Jerry Brown, trying to, quote, protect and support women, children, and working families. Fun fact, a majority of companies in the S&P 500 have at least one woman on their boards, but only about a quarter have more than two, according to a study by PwC Justin. Surely this will solve everything, no? Like, this will just end sexism outright, I think.
I mean, that's what I've been hearing, and I heard that, like, once we had a black president, it would end all racism, too. So I think history has proven, and reality has proven, that that is true. There is no more racism in America. So, therefore, if we do this, there will be no more sexism, either. Or maybe the reverse will happen, as seems to have happened, and there'll be more rape afterwards. Because aren't we saying there's more racism now? So are people saying they really want more rape?
Yeah. It's sad.
Look.
It's sad.
Look, we could go the whole collectivist route and everything, but my question is, what is the penalty? Because I think all this is a tax in California, where California passes these laws where if you break them, the tax is something minuscule, so you just break them because it's not enough to break your budget or anything, but it's a way that they can tax the people who aren't morally pure. So it's like the straw tax, right? It's only like $300 a year if a restaurant breaks the straw thing where they still use plastic straws. So of course most restaurants are going to do it, and then they'll just keep raising that tax until businesses that want to use plastic straws leave the state. So they've created a morally pure state. It's the same thing here. They're just going to fine a company that doesn't have a female board member, and they'll keep doing their business until it's no longer economically feasible and they'll leave the state.
Yeah, that seems to me like what's going on here. It's one of these measures that in reality is not going to have a big effect, but they get to have a big press release and talk about how they're helping women and fighting the evil corporate fat cats, etc., when in reality they're just collecting some tax revenue.
Right, and so what you didn't add on to that is steal the money from the people.
Yes, well, taxation is theft, so. William, aren't you a little upset by this? Aren't they missing some other quotas here that might pertain to the groups that you belong to?
Yeah, I don't think there are any French horn requirements. Like,
that's right.
People who play French horn. Yeah, I don't think I think that there's not enough people who play French horn that are on corporate boards, and it's due to discrimination, systemic discrimination. There's tons of trumpet players.
Culture of French horn players.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I'm kind of confused.
Blow.
I'm kind of confused. We have great tonguing, though.
Oh, my God.
I think
told that one before.
And in many different ways.
At the ready.
Yeah. I'm very confused. I thought women were paid less than a man. And according to that fact, women should be all over corporate boards, right? Corporate boards are, they cost a lot of money. You pay millions of dollars to your board members. There should be all women, right? I mean, if they're getting paid less, there should be tons of demand for women to be on corporate boards.
Yeah, if we're getting like a 23% discount.
Yeah.
But absolutely. You forgot the fact, William, that the people in charge hate women. So they hate them so much, they hate them more than they love money. That's how full of hate these people are.
It's such a conundrum.
Wow. Well, to back off the joke for a second, what's going to actually happen in reality if this actually stands? Because I can't believe that this wouldn't be challenged, constitutional challenge. Like, compelled association seems like it would violate the Constitution. But if, let's assume, and I know this is going to be a stretch that's going to blow any social justice warrior that's listening to this show, they're just going to blow their mind. Let's assume that it's not 100% sexist society. Let's say it's like 50% sexist. In other words, like it's like slightly sexist, you know, but people still hire women when they, you know, half the time, when they should be doing it, you know, 100% of the time, right? All things being equal.
That's right.
They still hire women when, like, there's no man available to do the job. They're okay with it.
I'm not even going to say that. I'm going to say literally that you flipped a coin to decide whether you're going to be misogynist in this hire or not. Okay? Like, I'm making a thought experiment here.
Let's get some of those coins as show merch.
Yeah. So if you do that, if you think that it's not anything other than 100%, you would assume that there's the... they would want to hire the most qualified woman that's left, right? Like what, yes. You know, like, so there's going to be in reality, but what there's going to be is a very big shortage of women who are qualified to be on corporate boards. And
yes,
that's probably, or that could also be the explanation as to why there are so few women on corporate boards now.
How dare you?
That's
an attack.
Yeah. If you're trying to hire the best person, even half the time, you might not get as many women as men on corporate boards for various reasons. Now, what about the other way, too? Why did we start with corporate boards and not garbage men? That's sanitation right. workers are like 97% male. I think that's due to misogyny.
Yeah, what does Adam Carolla always say? You always hear about corporate boards and tech jobs. You never hear about the lack of Jewish roofers.
Yeah.
For instance.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how many construction worker females there are. That's clearly due to discrimination. Yeah. Like, so we're joking around the point here, but people make choices, right? It's really hard. I've worked in the tech field basically my entire career. It is so hard to when you're not in the collectivist mindset to try and get candidates from diverse sources. There aren't that many. Even if I wanted to buy into the social justice philosophy and try to hire only women, let's say, into the tech field.
Like Brett Kavanaugh.
If I only wanted to do that, it's so hard to find people that are willing to accept the position that you're offering them, right? People have this crazy thing called free will. Like, regardless of whether they're male or female, according to my in-depth research, both males and females have free will. And to get people to decide to take positions based on all of the factors in their lives, like, people make choices. And I think it's really patronizing to say that the reason, you know, that we're going to force corporations to have more women on their board. Like, where are they going to come from, right? Who's going to force the women to make the choice to be on those boards?
Yeah, I want to reiterate William's point very briefly and then make one point of my own and then toss it back to Justin to scream. which is, when I'm hiring, it is hard enough to find someone who is qualified. And honestly, it is so hard to find someone who is qualified that I take the first qualified candidate I can find. I don't care who they are. I don't care if they're a man or a woman or a Zay. Quality. I want a quality candidate, and that's already difficult enough. So that's just a shade of nuance on William's very well-made point. And then my second point is, this is literally fascism. That word gets thrown around a lot. But fascism is when the government allows private companies to be owned privately, but basically dictates how their business is run. This is literally fascism, perpetuated, mind you, by the people who are out there saying they're anti-fascist. So, Justin, scream away. And then we'll get on to the Asian story.
Do you want me to scream before the Asian story?
Oh, he's saving up his screams because I want to know what about the trans people? Like if
like people, Caltrans or?
Well, like if you're trans, do you count as a woman or a man for this this new California law. Because as someone who identifies as a woman for business purposes, such as a host for a very popular podcast, maybe I'm qualified for these new board positions that are opening up.
Wait, I have a resume. With another podcast? What very popular podcast do you host?
I have almost a year now under my belt as a identifying as a woman in a business context. I can put on my resume. Would that qualify me for a board position in California under this new law?
That would be the greatest troll ever for businesses, just to have all these men just start saying they identify as women to get around this law. Be the greatest troll of the state of California ever. Also, is California saying that there are only two genders? It's like, are they officially under law said there are two genders? So anyway.
I don't know. And you know that there are those trans radical feminists, right? So the feminists are split on this whole, is a male to female transitioned individual a female or not? Do they count as a female or not? So I don't think there's even agreement in the social justice community on that issue.
Yeah.
You know what we can all agree on? That the women locked in my garage don't have choice.
Oh. I thought we were talking about a no dating Asians policy. Which is the next story, by the way. I thought that was the transition you were giving me as a joke, but we can also talk about the creepy women locked up in your garage.
That's the same thing. False dichotomy, bro. Of course false the creepy women locked in my garage are Asian.
That's right. So this comes from nextshark.com, which I didn't know was a thing, but after looking at all the articles, it appears to be an Asian culture website. So, of course, that's we got this from Justin. So
we got this from my girlfriend.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a popular, I guess, Australian TV show, a dating show, where contestants talk about themselves or reveal things about themselves, and then women leave their lights on if they're interested in the man, or take their lights off if they're not interested in the man. The show is called Take Me Out. And
oh, I thought
enter...
it was called Roxanne because the lights are red. Are the lights red?
Sure. Is that do you have a dog now?
That sounds like, is that your dog?
No. Oh, is that William's dog? Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, it was my dog. In the show. But as I've warned you guys before, I have the mute. You guys just hear the mic all the time. So,
welcome to the meta side. We can hear William's dog. Okay. Yeah. Enter a bachelor named George, an adventurous vlogger from Sydney, who is hoping to find a woman who he can take on his trips around the world. After George made his brief introduction in the first round, 24 of the 30 women kept their lights on. While the number is not bad, it was unfortunate that many of those who did not want to advance the next round were Asian women. Why? So the first one, Gianna, said, "I have a no dating Asian sort of policy, and you kinda look a bit like my brother." So George, as you can tell now, is an Asian man. Another one, whose name was Creasy, Sherry, said that she also had a no-dating Asians policy and also said he looked like her brother. And the host of the show was flabbergasted that the Asian women on the show did not want to date the Asian man. And so what's interesting about this article, I think, Justin, is that this article paints these women, who I'll remind you one more time are Asian, as racist for not wanting to date Asian men. Justin, as the resident Asian expert, what say you?
At least they finally confirmed that they all look the same. No, I mean, this is a weird thing in our culture, right? I mean, it's even weird for ourselves because we're all about individualism and individuals, but then, like, to have a preference based upon race, like, that's, like, where does that cross the line into racism and where does it not? And are these girls being racist because of what they're doing? I mean, you certainly can't be racist against your own race, can you? But then there's the whole concept of the self-hating Jew, right? So it's just, the whole thing is very interesting to me. But what the worst part about all of it is rather than have a discussion about it, here's the thing. Like, there's that whole side where there's the discussion, and we can put that to the side, and we can be like, hey, there's an interesting discussion for the Guys We Fucked podcast. And then there's the discussion for our podcast is the immediate reaction of everyone is to shame these girls. It's not to understand them. It's not to use this as an opportunity to have an understanding, a conversation. It's, hey, you fucking Asian bitches, fuck you. That's what it goes to.
Wow. I read the transcript. Wow. And I didn't see that.
That's the subtext.
But, oh, if you read between the lines of the story.
Way between the lines.
If you open your eyes, William, and you don't read it like an Asian.
Oh, come on. Oh, come on. That's man.
I'm going to have to start identifying as an Asian woman on the podcast to make up for that joke.
You just crossed a line. So here's the thing. I think we confuse, and maybe William can weigh in on this. We have this confusion now where everything is racist or some things are just racial. So, for instance, there is a whole collectivism angle here that I think we could tackle and say that it's weirdly collectivist to say, I won't date any Asian man, like, period. That seems odd and collectivist. But the point is, to have a racial preference, I think, is racial and not racist. William, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there. Like that, I've given this example before, so hopefully it doesn't get me in trouble again, or for the first time. It hasn't gotten me in trouble yet. But I don't particularly find men from the Middle East very attractive. There's something about the general facial features that it doesn't connect. It doesn't. It's not attractive to me. Now, that doesn't mean I have a no dating people from Iran and Iraq policy. It's just I've
hands
recognized
off,
this
Habib.
Fact. I've just recognized that fact about myself that there are some general body types and that leads into some ethnicities and races that I'm attracted to. Now I'm not, you know, I don't have an Asian fetish like certain people on the podcast, but. You know, I've dated a few Asian guys. I've dated a few white guys. I've dated a few black guys, but I've never dated someone from the Middle East. I don't know. It gets down to it's not a character judgment I'm making. It's a purly aesthetic physical thing.
Here's
right?
the thing.
And it's
You're
probably
not
nothing
saying...
I can control. It's not like I can wake up one day and decide to find, you know, that like a Middle Eastern, you know, like the general Middle Eastern body type or facial features attractive. Like, I'm not going to be able to change that about myself.
Right. You're not saying, look, I'm not attracted to Persian men and they're all inferior and should be browned up and put in internment camps.
Like, yeah.
That
I'm
would
not
be racist.
Saying that would be racist. Right? Or saying that I'm not attracted to, you know, we joked about it, but I'm not attracted to people from Saudi Arabia because they're all terrorists, right? Like, that would be racist too, right? Like, I'm not making character or moral judgment. I'm making an aesthetic judgment. And that's the thing that because racism is used as kind of a amalgamation of a concept, right? They put both the physical characteristics and the character judgment things, like the cultural judgments, into the same concept. That's what makes it confusing, right, to people, and why it's unclear, and why I like your distinction there between racist and racial, right? Because the racial goes back to, like, hey, there are physical characteristics, and yeah, we've got some emotional baggage around some of those physical characteristics, but if you're talking just on the physical characteristics level, I don't see where that's a moral failing, right? I'm not immoral because I'm not attracted to a certain skin color or facial features.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing about what this show did, William, is they set these girls up. So they picked an Asian guy that they thought would be universally attractive because of his personality, which is another fucked up thing, right? The idea that there's like one person everyone would be attracted to. And then they put girls on Asian girls on the show that they knew wouldn't be attracted to him because he was Asian, and they set this situation up so they could have this exact reaction. That's what's even more fucked up about this.
So you're saying this is brought to you by the producers of Jerry Springer?
I'm saying it's brought to you by any television producer of any television show that has any semblance of real people in it. They engineer these situations on purpose. You think they didn't ask these girls on a dating show what their preferences were?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, you know what this UK school's preference is that you do things very quietly. Yes. A UK university has banned clapping at student union events, so it doesn't trigger anxiety with undergraduates. They're told to use jazz hands instead. This is The Midside on NPR. All right, enough of that. So the students at the University of Manchester, the union, voted to ban clapping at Manchester student union events because it causes anxiety, and they've asked students to instead use the British Sign Language for clapping, which in America looks like jazz hands, because that's us. And of course, people are going nuts over this, because what the hell? At the Jeremy Vine, who has a blue check mark, so he must be someone, said, clapping is banned at University of Manchester student events to avoid triggering anxiety and improve accessibility. I'm glad some brave young souls decided to ignore the difficulties caused by sudden noises 100 years ago, and it accompanies a picture of World War I soldiers. People weighed in saying that they have children with autism, and they teach them to clap and how to process noises and not to avoid them. And that at French Ricky said, it's absolutely ridiculous. In 10 years' time, we won't be able to think or breathe without offending someone somewhere. So, Justin, snowflakeism run amok? Or should we all give up the clapping in favor of the snapping?
Manchester? More like Womanchester, am I right?
That's wow. Why people tune in for that grade A quality humor. It's the writing of the show that really draws in the audiences. Just know
no, this
that
is this you spent is the weeks escalation. Crafting. Look, I mean, you don't always like to use the slippery slope argument, but this is a perfect example of it. What happens in 30 years when people are pussified from only hearing the snapping, the jazz hit? Then no one's going to want to do that either.
Yeah.
What is
if
enough
you're
enough?
Happy
it's
and you know
enough.
It. Stare silently off into space.
No, it's jazz your hands. Come on, that song writes itself.
Stare silently off into space.
Yeah. So if that was the case, everyone would think I was happy all the time. Don't smile, stare silently off into space. Maybe I should let this happen then.
Yes, it's an interesting time we live in. William, this goes to something that Dr. Drew has talked a lot about on his podcast, which is that we're treating if we legitimately think these things are traumatizing, we're actually treating trauma the exact wrong way. Because if you have a fear of elevators, no therapist in the world will tell you never go in a building with elevators. In fact, ask your building if they will demolish themselves to get rid of the elevators. You work on getting over your fear of elevators because you have to live in the world. Are we just teaching children to not be able to live in reality?
Yes, that is a correct statement. We are teaching people the exact wrong thing.
Objection! Objection! Leading the
leading
witness.
Leading the witness, yes.
Sustained.
You can't object.
It's my show. Damn this it, is... I can do that if I want.
Welcome to Justin's Court. Womp, 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 womp.
I'd watch that show.
Well,
and you'd be on it. Just like objecting and sustaining. Yes.
I think that we should continue and take this several steps further. I mean, if clapping is traumatic, I know that there are victims of domestic violence that being around a male might be traumatic. So we should separate the sexes. Mm-hmm. There are certain religions that have been quite oppressive to homosexuals. So I think anybody who's a member of any of those religions or have any of the garb associated with those religions should be separated.
Democrats put Japanese in internment camps in the 40s, so I think Japanese citizens and Democrats should be segregated in their entirety.
Yeah. So
guys,
if we,
maybe that we could can be traumatic. Each have individual pieces of land and have them have borders and they can be named different things.
Have our own individual safe spaces?
Each in our own individual safe space.
And we can be in those safe spaces are people like us. And I think we can call them countries.
And then in those countries we can have, I don't know, property and rights to it, etc. Someday we're going to backwards rationalize with the social justice of individualism, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think today's
the
day.
No, the point I was making is what William is describing we had before we decided we needed a fucking melting pot. It's like, hey, remember when we did that and then the entire world was at war with each other? Yeah, that worked out really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
real weirdness. Go ahead,
Ryan. I was going to take a long view here. Is this really just, you know, we started, we've got a lot of cultural elements here, but one thing that came to mind is we're catering to everyone's disability in a way that's completely irrational, right? And you brought it, you made the point that Dr. Drew makes on his podcast, but like I'm connecting to the Penn and Teller bullshit episode on handicap parking, right? And the ADA. And we're making it so that everyone, that we have to compromise things for certain politically connected disabilities, but we end up making it worse for everyone, right? Including the people with the disabilities. And in this case, we're talking about, you know, people who may have anxiety or PTSD, but it's true across the board.
It is, absolutely. And it is all about political connection because it's all about political suppression because it's all about power, which is what tool can we use today to bludgeon our foes into doing what we want them to do? So today, if we can make them feel like they're oppressors for clapping, well, by golly, that's a useful tool to, you know, tear down the patriarchy or whatever it is, whatever the cause du jour is. So all of this is cultural Marxism, all of it, and we should fight it all, or, like we do here in the Midside, at least laugh at it.
That's the perfect transition, actually, because when we talk about laughing at things, I actually had a real life witness the farce moment, which shows that if you participate in this podcast for long enough and become part of this mode of witnessing the farce, it really, you do internalize it and it becomes automatic to you. So I want to share that experience in The Hopeful Romantic with Jam Out. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events in the air timeline lapse. My made for TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. Before we get into this sharing of the experience here, and so Daniel doesn't give me shit for shilling, I just want to shill right up front and say, support us on Patreon, patreon.com/themidside, themidside.com/Patreon, or you could just leave us a 5-star review on Amazon, whichever you think is more valuable. So, William and Daniel, I wasn't going to review this at first, but then I saw it, and it was just a ridiculous experience I had. I saw A Star is Born, the movie starring Bradley Cooper, which he also wrote and directed, and starring Lady Gaga. Have either of you seen the previews for this movie?
On purpose?
I did see the preview for it. I remember looking at it on Rotten Tomatoes because apparently, you know, we had the, I don't know if we covered it on the podcast, but it was certainly in Discord. We were talking about how people were accusing fans of Lady Gaga from suppressing people going to a superhero movie. So I did watch the preview for both those films.
Yeah, I've only seen the controversy around it. I haven't actually seen the trailer or anything because Lady Gaga.
I don't even know what the controversy is. What's the controversy?
There's two. One is the one William alluded to. That apparently, or maybe mistakenly, or whatever, her her fans were accused of trying to sabotage Venom, people trying to go see Venom. And then the second controversy is that this is a remake of a classic movie, I guess. I don't even know.
It's a remake of a remake of a remake. There's been like, this is like the fourth version of it. I looked it up.
Oh, well, people are angry about it. I don't know. People are angry about everything online, so.
Yeah, I mean, to get angry about this being a remake, I mean, it seems like it gets remade once a generation. Although I did look it up to see because of my reaction to this. So I saw this mainly because my girlfriend wanted to see it. But I mean, also, look, it's actually Lady Gaga not being Lady Gaga. She actually just sings. And when she actually just sings, she has a very nice voice. The whole movie starts out with Bradley Cooper playing this country star who goes into a random bar and finds her singing, brings her on stage, and it's all about how she becomes a star. But I'm watching this movie, and I'm trying to figure it out, right? Because a star is born. That doesn't sound like it can be naturalism, right, guys? It sounds like romanticism, because it's showing the journey of how you become someone great. Am I wrong?
Well, no. Unless they were literally just documenting, like, the birth of a star.
But you wouldn't pick that subject matter if you were going to go with naturalism. That's oppositionally opposed to, that's redundant, but that's opposed to what naturalism's content is. Naturalism is all about life is suffering and you don't have a choice in things. You're just along for the ride. And the only choice you really have is over your own life or not.
Yeah. We grant all your premises.
Yeah. So I'm watching it, and that's the internal struggle I have. Because when I watch movies nowadays, I try to identify if it's naturalism or not. And if it's not, or it looks like it might go that way, I always go, how are they going to fit suicide into this movie? Because
what?
That's what naturalism is, right? Naturalism always ends in a suicide. So I'm watching this movie, and I'm going, how is this going to end in a suicide? Who's the character who's going to kill himself? Well, spoiler alert, not that you care. This movie actually ends with Bradley Cooper's character killing himself. So the whole movie, he's an alcoholic. He goes to rehab, gets healthy, and then comes back from rehab. And her manager basically, he's married to Lady Gaga at this point. And her manager tells him, basically, you're useless to her. You're bad for her career. She lies to him about why she's canceling the tour. She's canceling the tour to stay home with him. And so she goes out to a performance, and while she's out at the performance, he hangs himself in the garage. And this is supposed to be this tragic, tragic moment, right? Because this is the man who made her a star and brought her into the public eye. And he's just so beaten down by the world that he has to kill himself. The movie literally ends with her singing a song that he wrote about loving her and not being able to say goodbye. And she sings the song. In the final shot of the movie, I'm not kidding you here, the final shot of the movie is a close-up on her face. Everything else is dark, and you see her crying, and it cuts to black. Not even joking, my immediate reaction is to start laughing. Everyone else in the theater is like heartbroken and crying. Afterwards, my girlfriend was like, did you see that woman staring at you like you were crazy? And I was like, yes, that's the point. I come across as the crazy one. But what is the redeeming value of that movie? There isn't one. They're just trying to fit a formula. They even said it in the movie that the character who killed himself believed that every song has the same 12 chords. It's just what you have to say, how you play those chords, that makes it different. That's what Hollywood is now. It's the same naturalistic story over and over again. How is this any different from Black Swan, The Wrestler, Birdman? It's the same exact story over and over again. And it was just hilarious to watch them try to twist it into this ending. Because even when he was a drunk, it's not like he was a terrible drunk. And what I mean by that is, like, she won the Grammy for Best New Artist, and he's drunk out of his mind. And she goes on stage, and he, like, collapses on the way to the stage, and he's just like, can I come on stage with you, while she's giving the speech? Then he gets on stage, and he's just He's like a child. He's shocked. He's like, oh my God, you won. Look, that's you. You won the Grammy. And then he pisses himself. If you're going to do this story, why aren't you committing it to full darkness? It was mind boggling the way these people think they have to be artistic. And I'm sure a lot of it has to do with what Bradley Cooper believes would make him a true artist. So I just wanted to share that because I think it really exemplifies what's wrong with our culture artistically right now.
And if you want an alternative with Bradley Cooper, watch what sounds to be like the inverse of this movie, which is a Silver Linings Playbook. So,
oh yeah,
which takes a naturalistic premise and then makes the movie romantic.
So. Yeah, and what did they do to that director?
Like he's evil now, right?
Right, he's evil now because he like yelled at some people.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some more old white guys. It's time for Trailer Takedown. As always, if you want to see the trailers before the episode comes out, you can go to themidside.com/podcast. You can pause the episode now and watch the trailers, or you can watch it in between each trailer. It can go first, pause, second, pause, third, pause. See how that works? Wonderful.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Mortal Engines is, I don't know what it is. I've seen like four trailers for this fucking movie, and I have no idea what it is. It's like all of the cities on Earth are now giant battleships on land, and they go around and they fight each other. But then Agent Smith from The Matrix really wants this one young woman because she has the secret to dominating this world for some reason. And then this trailer hinted at a supernatural villain that Agent Smith reports to. I don't know. This seems like another Pacific Rim, so maybe Daniel will really like it. And I feel like the nerd in me wants to really like this movie, but I can't figure it out, and it honestly pisses me off that I can't figure it out, which makes me not want to see this movie. Tackle. Daniel?
I feel like a movie is going to be bad when they spend so much of the trailer reminding you that like it's from the mind of Peter Jackson or whatever, and it's like, he's the guy who did The Hobbit. He's the guy who did Lord of the Rings. He's the guy who did all the fantasy stuff that you loved as a child. Rely a little bit too much on that in this trailer, and I also don't know what the hell is going on. Battle Cities isn't really the same as giant robots, so tackle.
I looked up, after I watched the preview for this, I watched it twice, and I couldn't get what was going on. I actually looked it up. It's a book published by Scholastic Book Publishing. Isn't that the magazine we got in elementary school for books, to like order books?
Yeah, it's like really young kids.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know if that's all. That's as deep as my research went on this, and I still couldn't figure out what the movie was about. Justin, you pointed out that they were touting the director and the production team, which is never a good sign. Another not a good sign is for a Daniel sci-fi film. Out. Oh yeah, for a sci-fi film focusing only on the action. There was nothing really about the universe other than the action of cities moving around, right? There was not. Where's the sci-fi hook in this preview? There isn't any, right?
She's special, and he's hunting her. That's the sci-fi hook.
Yeah, I'm not buying it, so tackle.
It's also Silence of the Lambs.
Second trailer.
Vice is a biopicture about Dick Cheney starring Christian Bale. And look, I could say lots of things about this movie as a movie, but this is going to turn into like a tangential rant right now. At the end of this trailer, they put up like, I don't even remember what it says. It's like, you know, the untold true story that changed history or something, changed the course of history. I think that's what it said. Fuck forever. You. Okay. I'm so tired of these fucking, this is why, even though I'm libertarian, I sympathize with the right so much, and probably why I identified as right when I was a kid. You make up this stuff and you shove it down people's throats and you say that it's the untold history, and then you get them to believe it like it's true. This whole thing, the whole time Dick Cheney was vice president, that he was really the president and he was a mastermind and he was manipulating the world and he changed the world and blah, blah, blah. Could somebody please tell me, identify a long-lasting effect Dick Cheney had on this country or the world? Because I can't think of one off the top of my head. If you can do that, I would love to do that. I can't even really think of a long-lasting effect George W. Bush had. Isn't the entire retrospective on his presidency always going to be 9/11? But no, now we release a movie. It's going to be Oscar bait. And it's going to be all about how evil Dick Cheney was. And how about even that opening scene was how he basically negotiated being the president because Bush was too stupid to realize Cheney was negotiating to be the president, even though he was vice president. It's fucking, the fact that this even exists, I feel like is insulting to my intelligence. Tackle.
Daniel?
Looks terrible. I will say that Christian Bale, really throws himself into these roles. He looks old and white as Dick Cheney. So well done there, Christian Bale. Yeah, it's all fairly much nonsense. I have no love for George W. Bush. To name two lasting negative impacts, one is the stimulus package, and the other is the never-ending godforsaken war in Afghanistan. Which is nonsense, but I don't think Dick Cheney really had much to do with either of those. Maybe he had something to do with the war in Afghanistan. I take that back. So, maybe one? There's
Daniel,
maybe one. Yeah.
I don't think a stimulus package is a long-lasting negative effect.
Wow.
You know, I think of terrible jokes, and then I keep them inside. Please don't keep them inside. They're too fantastic. Okay.
I prefer to keep my stimulus package inside.
Okay, here we go. Okay, all right. Now the show has reached a new low. Okay. So,
yes.
The thing I get confused about in this trailer is this by the channel Vice? Or is it just called Vice?
Yeah, no, I swear when I first saw the text, that was my take too. It's like, oh, Vice is doing a Christian Bale as Dick Cheney movie?
Yeah, I was.
That's
like,
exactly
how
I read
the title of this Vice movie.
I thought it was a spinoff of Miami Vice, where it was just everywhere at once. That was my thought until I saw it was Dick Cheney. Then I was like, "Oh, I get it. Dumb."
Yes. Yeah. So I'm gonna tackle this. Yeah.
Tackle.
Why would you call this Dick?
Because there's already a movie called Dick, and it's about Richard Nixon.
Oh, right. That's the one with Mary Jane from the original Kirsten Dunst, right?
Yeah.
And Michelle Williams, yeah. William?
Yeah, so I think the movie, the preview is trying to claim, at least it seems to claim, that the long-lasting impact you're having is a stronger vice president, like someone who actually got tasks delegated to him, like important tasks, I guess. The acting looks almost caricature, which is probably not a good sign, especially of George W. Bush. Like, that seems like a character, like a SNL version of George W. Bush. I don't see anything redeemable at all in this movie, but I will reserve my judgment to get the real trailer instead of the Vice trailer. So... Tackle.
I want to make one more point on your point, William, which is the caricature of George Bush in everything. Every time he's portrayed as just a Texas oaf. I get that. I mean, he's not the smartest president ever. But having met the man now on multiple occasions, the thing that people miss about him is that his down-to-earthedness is insanely charming. It's ridiculously charming because he's so genuine. And you may not like him and you may think he's dumb. That does not change the fact that he is incredibly genuine and nice and interested in you and when you're talking to him. And I think
he's always portrayed as a complete airhead, right? Like disconnected from reality. That's
right.
He's always portrayed that way.
And it's you can do movies. I don't care if there are movies bashing on George Bush. But it's just that your acting is so cartoonish and stilted that it's never interesting because it's just a caricature. So, note to Hollywood. Go actually spend some time with George W. Bush.
Yeah, but that's part of what I'm saying, where that's the left-wing agenda, where the whole thing is like anyone from that region of the country and that segment of the country are buffoons in their eyes. So, of course, they're not going to understand what it really is. And I also disagree, William. I don't think they're just saying that he created history because he had the most power ever as a vice president. If you look at the subtext of the trailer where he's like, I'm a CEO, and then they talk about, like, he gets in charge of, whatever they said he was in charge of that was related to him being a CEO. They were going with the whole idea that Cheney was secretly manipulating the country the whole time.
Yeah, I can see that.
Final trailer.
The Mule is Clint Eastwood's latest directorial effort. He also stars in it, and he stars as a really, really incredibly old guy that you don't know how he's still even walking, yet somehow is a drug mule. And it's this whole drama about, is this the last time he's ever going to do it? And how does he help his family? And how did he get into this job? Besides the trailer itself, because you know what I'm going to say, because it's a Clint Eastwood movie. Braun, the production company, is not LeBron James's production company. Though I imagine he must have been very angry when he tried to make that name and he found out a Canadian company already had it. Because that was my first thing. I was like, wow, LeBron James is really trading in old white guys right now? Like, how are people not angry about this? But it's not actually LeBron's production company. It's a Canadian one. But I'm going to see this movie. Hug. Daniel?
It's not my favorite premise of a Clint Eastwood movie, certainly, but Clint Eastwood has not disappointed me yet, so I'm definitely going to see it. I'll say that the trailer was actually particularly well done. You don't see good trailers anymore, but the way this trailer was done and the ratcheting up and the way the music was used as, you know, it's used almost in like a Zack Snyder way. Now that's bold praise, but it's used to heighten the emotion. It's not used as like a hey, look at me, like this is a cutesy use of music. It's this actually adds to the emotion of this given thing in this moment. So I thought the trailer was well done, and I'm gonna hug.
So I too worry about Clint Eastwood's decrepitness in this movie, but I think that it's got, hopefully it's acting. I mean, he seems really old in this trailer. I was really fascinated by the way that this trailer, it didn't give away the plot, if that makes any sense. Like, you know that he's going on a last run, but you don't see, it gives you hints about what the adversity is going to be, but it doesn't, I don't feel like I've watched the whole movie. And sometimes you see previews where they sort of give away the whole movie. Comedies sometimes fall victim to this. They always put the best jokes in the preview, right? Then it takes away from the effect. So I was intrigued. This isn't a movie that I would want. This isn't typically a movie that I would go see. So to say I'm giving it a hug is probably high praise. Hug.
I think we're at that point, though, in this culture, at least I am, is I will go to a movie by a director I trust, a writer I trust, an actor I trust, really, like Jon Hamm. I'll go see anything Jon Hamm's in because he always picks good roles in interesting movies, rather than even a premise I like by a director or writer or actor I can't stand.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I agree. I think that's, you know, you can go too far with that. You know, there are some people who see, like, who love every Marilyn Monroe movie, let's say, right? So, but as a general rule, yeah, I think it's better to look at the history of the writer or the director or even some of the actors or actresses and know that, oh, these are the kinds of, they tend to pick good things. That's good to know, and it can be a really good guide.
That sums that up. And how about we be a really good guide for the Midsiders out there when we talk about some fallout here in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they Life on the Midside, I just picked the topic, but it's also open to you Midsiders out there as well. So if you have something that you want to talk to us about or hear us talk about or give some advice on, you know, you can record an audio message, send it to us, and we'll play it on the show. Or you can just write into us, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you want, and, you know, ask a question. Let us know what you want to talk about or hear us talk about.
And don't forget Discord.
Yeah, Discord's a great place to do that, actually, William. Great point.
Yep, just check our Discord link on the show notes for this episode at themidside.com/podcast.
What I want to talk about, though, is I want to talk about what the fallout for the Kavanaugh confirmation is on our everyday lives. Because something I realized with the way I was reacting to this and the way I was responding to this, I kind of think this is sort of like the second major political checkpoint in my life. And what I mean is the first one to me was 9/11. Like, that was a game changer to me. That changed the world. And I think the same thing has just happened with the Kavanaugh hearings, with the way people became so galvanized and the fact that he actually got confirmed. I think it's sort of a point of no return. And my question is, how does that affect us every day? How does it affect us in the way we live our lives? Because to me, it creates a very dangerous world. First of all, it's tough not to live in fear of the dangerous world. But second off, just from a logistical standpoint, how can I be associated in any way besides the absolute necessity for anyone who believes we're living in a rape culture? Don't I have to, especially as a white male, not just a male, a white male, don't I have to, if someone legitimately believes we're living in a rape culture and legitimately believes Kavanaugh was part of that rape culture, but let's just take the rape culture part. If somebody legitimately believes that, isn't the safest thing to do to cut that person out of your life because A, they're so disconnected from reality, but B, they could turn on you at any time? And I'm speaking as a male right now, especially a white male. And that's the point I'm at right now, is that's really, I can't think of any other solution. I think the world has fundamentally changed that I have to do that.
It's interesting. I do think there that the social justice element of the left is radicalizing at a pace that I don't think we've seen in recent American history. I mean, you might have to go back to the 60s to see something like this. And this might end up being worse. I'm not sure. We'll see where it goes from here. But I am cautious with the people I share things with now, even online. I cut out a lot of people who cross a line because, I mean, look, I've gotten more death threats over this Kavanaugh thing than anything else in my life, which is odd. You know, where I work has been in the midst of this, and we've taken a lot of precautions to be safe. It's a frightening time. So at least until it cools off, but I don't know. The part about this that I think is less depressing, but I'm sure if I'll call it outright encouraging, is that I think Kavanaugh, in showing righteous indignation against the false accusation, provided a bit of a roadmap for how one defends oneself in these situations, which is you have to show some emotion about this, and you have to be unequivocal about it. Any pandering whatsoever, any granting of any premise whatsoever, means instantaneous loss. You just can't do it. It's instantaneous loss. And here is something you'll never hear me say ever again, probably. This is only possible because of Donald Trump. I think wow. Trump, in maybe accidentally, maybe because of just of his weird personality, showed that the way to stand up to bullies is to slap them in the face.
Well, Daniel, I think that's
a good thing.
I agree. It's a good thing. And I do think to a certain extent that I think that's why most people on the right voted for him. Being generous. I do think maybe not most. Well, I'm going to dial that back a little bit. Maybe not most. But I think a lot of people on the right voted for Trump for that reason. that they were sick of the left-wing media. They were sick of the fake news their whole life, and they thought this was the way to get back. Hey, good, someone's finally getting back at them, which, allowed Kavanaugh to react the way he did and get away with it. Because I don't know about you, but growing up, I was always taught that if you respond in this way, it shows that you're even more guilty. And it shows that, oh, the fact that you're reacting with emotion shows that there's something wrong with you. It makes you look even worse. Whereas now we're seeing it doesn't. And yeah, if I'm going to be positive, then I'm going to hope that people saw this and they saw the reality of it and they understood what's going on with Kavanaugh, and that makes them fear the left and hate the left even more. But I'm just not so sure.
And maybe, William, you can build on this a little, because I don't mean pure emotion, right? That's not what Kavanaugh did. Mm-hmm. He didn't get up there and just cry and say, oh, woe is me, why are you picking on me? He had righteous indignation, to use a phrase that goes back to Breitbart, right? He had anger because he had moral certitude, and he was upset. And I think that combination of things is the right combo. It's not just emotion. It's not just moral certitude. It's both, because there's no mind body dichotomy.
Yeah, I think it's a interesting way that you've put it. And I think there's also, you talked about how it shows a roadmap for defending yourself. It gives you a playbook for that. And I think the other aspect of that playbook is, he did not enter into the premise of the men versus women. And you see this with a lot of the beta male sort of like apology for anyone who has an arbitrary accusation against them, right? Where they buy into the group dynamic right away. They say, well, I am a male and it is my job to listen, right? Versus someone with that pride, that moral pride, saying like, no, like this is not who I've made myself to be. It's not consistent with how I behave or my values. And it's offensive that to be treated as a guilty party in this case when there's no evidence to support it. It makes a lot more sense to not grant that group premise. Right. And I think that's the other key part of the playbook.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. So I think there's some positive things here, Justin. I don't think it's all doom and gloom.
Well, I was going to say, for me, I think you ask what's the fallout in our everyday lives. I think for me, there's nothing that this is changing right now in my everyday life. I wouldn't say nothing. I certainly have been more reserved about my opinions about this whole identitarian movement in certain social circles, right? Because there's so much, because of the polarization, I've had to change my behavior. And I'm hoping that the fallout of this is that I can start to be more open and have more discussions now that someone has... like you guys were saying, someone has sort of stood up for themselves in a particular way. I'm also worried about, that's my behavior. I'm also worried about other people's behavior, right? Like there's a lot of, if I were to say that I supported the Kavanaugh nomination, like at work or something, I think I would be met with, complete vitriol from certain people, right? Like just complete, like over the top hostility and
totally.
Tons of character judgments would be immediately thrown at me. And I don't think that that's really fair. And so I think that if people can recognize, like we talked about the independents being sort of swayed and not liking the way the Democrats were treated. If that happens in, like, let's say a work context or a social context and things that I'm in, people that I'm interacting with, I think that's going to be a great thing. If that reaction, if the general reaction from the non-automatically polarized people is when you do this group identity, arbitrary statements allowed, you know, hate all of the opposite group at all costs mentality, if that's your mentality, that it's immediately seen as negative and as counterproductive and almost immoral in itself, I think that'd be a great outcome to have in our everyday lives.
I agree, and I wasn't trying to say that it was all negative. I was just saying that that was my immediate response, was that it was a life-changing event. And then my first thing was the fear. And that doesn't mean it's all negative. I was just using that as an entry point. I figured you guys would follow up with some of the positives. So I don't know. I think that kind of sums it up. It sums up the kind of week it's been. Does anyone else have anything to add about this subject before we close out the episode?
I wonder what the next one's going to be like. I don't need to conjecture, just something to put in your brain to think about.
Yeah, and that's what I mean with it being a turning point, is I can't imagine anything ever going back to the way it was.
Yeah.
All right, what did we learn this trip, William?
Well, I learned that Clint Eastwood has such good acting chops, he can actually act 20 years older than he actually is.
Which would mean he acts 108.
Yeah.
108. Daniel?
I learned that, where was it? That we shill throughout the show now. And I don't have this big block of shill at the end. Because no one likes a steaming pile of shill at the end of their show.
That's right.
We like to keep our shilling curt. Some curt shilling.
Oh my good God. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that the Red Sox are beating the Yankees 10-1 right now in the sixth inning, and they're going to take a 2-1 lead in New York. Go Red Sox.
Yay. No more shilling.
All right, gentlemen, this concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Ebelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a Red Sox day.
Yeah! Go Red Sox! Yeah! Yankees suck.